Hey lawyers, here's a quick tip. Pay yourself. Welcome to The Lawyer Millionaire, where we deliver financial planning insights for ambitious law firm owners so you can enjoy more time, more abundance, and less stress, even if you're still growing your practice. Are you an owner of a growing law firm, but struggling with growing overhead at the same time? It's critical to put your profit first. Maximizing profitability, as our guest will share today, is not just a nice thing for you and for your family. It's also maybe your ethical imperative, and we'll talk a lot about that. Today, joining us is Arjan Robbins. He is the founder of How to Manage, an organization that works with small law firms across the country. And he's also the author of Profit First for Lawyers. And he's going to tell us all about that.
We are on a mission to help lawyers and law firm owners maximize wealth and achieve financial independence. Welcome to The Lawyer Millionaire with Darren Wirtz from Wirtz Financial Services. In this podcast, we will help you build wealth, minimize your taxes, and plan for retirement with money management strategies designed for the legal profession. Join us in this journey where we help you manage your money so you can make the most of your future. Start feeling confident in knowing you are well prepared for retirement and on track to financial independence. Now on to the show.
We're so excited to have you here today on The Lawyer Millionaire. There may be some listeners, I want to dive right in here. And, you know, there may be some listeners who've heard your belief that law firm owners should pay themselves first. I believe this too, by the way. But this is an idea that sometimes goes against the traditional method of accounting that we've sometimes become accustomed to.
That's because the traditional method of accounting sucks.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And we're going to talk all about that. But let's start with why, right? Why is it absolutely crucial for the financial success of law firm owners to pay themselves first?
Right. So let's start off with the basic idea, right? Number one, a law firm is a business, right? It's a business that markets, sells, delivers, and if you do it right, gets paid for solving people's problems for legal services, right? And a lot of lawyers have a real problem because they get brainwashed into thinking that it's just about the practice of law. The practice of law is a great, wonderful, noble profession. I went to law school too. But the business of a law firm is completely different. And you gotta like separate yourself. It's like the child who one day realizes, I'm not my mother, right? You know, little babies, when they're first born, they think of themselves as the same entity as their mother. And then they get to a certain age and they start realizing, eventually they realize, my mother is my mother and I'm me. My law firm is a business and I'm me. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of the law firm is to serve your life. And if your law firm isn't serving your life, then what do you have it for? Like, for real, why do you have a law firm if it's not working for you? It's a business, right? So in our world, we talk about a successful law firm. Mm-hmm. And every law firm, I've spoken with literally tens of thousands of lawyers. I've been doing this since 1999. I've been talking to tens of thousands of lawyers. And everyone agrees with the basic definition of a successful law firm, right? And anyone who doesn't is a lunatic.
So what is that? What's the definition?
Well, you want your business to serve you financially, right? If it doesn't give you enough net operating income, if it doesn't give you enough profit, forget about freaking gross revenue. Gross revenue is what we apply for Inc. 5000 awards with. Gross revenue is what we go and every year we celebrate all of our members who broke the seven-figure barrier for the first year. We have a whole big ceremony. We give them a ceremonial hammer for breaking the seven-figure barrier. I think this year we had 40 of our members who broke the seven-figure barrier for the first time in their life with their law firm. And we celebrate every month, you know, who has broken the seven-figure barrier in the first quarter of the year, the second quarter of the year, and so on. But that doesn't feed your family. right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the rewards, right? Your business has to serve you financially. It has to give you enough profit to live the way you want to live. Now, right. pose this question to literally thousands and thousands and thousands of some of the most highly educated human beings on the planet. And I'll tell them when I pose a question, I say, listen, I'm going to ask you this question, but let me tell you the question I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you to tell me what you can settle for. I'm not asking what you can get by on. I'm not asking you to tell me all the things you can do without. Hmm. I'm asking you, how do you, in your heart of hearts, honestly, if you're true to yourself, how do you really want to be living your life?
Mm-hmm.
What house do you really want to be living in? What car do you really want to be driving? What vacations do you really want to be taking? What domestic services do you really want to be employing? What education do you really want to provide for your children? What kind of charitable interests do you really, honestly, authentically have? Yeah. Do you have people in your family who you want to support, maybe elderly parents? How much does it cost to live the life you want to be living? Because it's a lot easier to build a law firm that gives you the life you want to have than it is to run a law firm that merely gives you a life you're willing to settle for, which is a paradox that most lawyers struggle with. So anyway, yeah. definition of a successful law firm. Number one, it serves you financially, right? Would anyone call a business, a restaurant, a shoe store, an ice cream shop, an accounting firm? Would anyone call it a successful business if it didn't generate enough profit for the owner to live the way they wanted to live? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Two, has to serve you personally, right? You make millions of dollars a year, but you have to work 12 hours a day. You have no control over your time. It drives a wedge between you and your family. You're just like a prisoner to your business. That's not a successful business. It might be a profitable job, yeah. but it's not a successful business. And the third element of a successful law firm is it has to serve you professionally. It's mm-hmm. got to help you make a positive impact in the world. It's got to do something to feed your soul. And this isn't just like aspirational. This is practical because I've worked with tens of thousands of law firm owners. Remember, I've been doing this since 1999. And what you see over and over and over and over again is if the work doesn't feed their soul, they won't do it. They quit. Right? So it's got to feed your soul. It's got to give you a personal life, and it's got to serve you financially and allow you to live the way you want to live. That's the definition of a successful law firm. And if your law firm isn't meeting these three standards, it's not successful yet. There's something you can do about it. Law firms are relatively simple businesses to fix and turn around and make them work. But first, you got to be honest with yourself. Do you have a successful law firm or not?
Yep.
Which led me to the book, Product Plug Now, Profit First for Lawyers. Get it at Amazon.
Yes.
That's why you got me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And it's so intricate, the connection between your personal life and your business life when you're a law firm owner. One of the reasons I love working with law firm owners, and it is such a struggle. You know, you may hit that seven-figure mark, but not be taking home adequate amount of money, right? You're making seven figures in your firm, but you don't have seven figures in the bank, right? And that's a problem. So
first
that's...
time that we broke seven figures in my business, which was back in 2012.
Yeah.
We were really proud and we shared it with our family and our friends and everything. And I remember we had a family member who's a sophisticated person. I mean, this isn't like some dumb, ignorant person who doesn't know anything, right? This is a person who owns her own business, owns investment properties, an educated, successful person. Mm-hmm. And she said with real enthusiasm and happiness for us, oh, congratulations, you're millionaires. We're not millionaires.
Right.
We broke the business, grossed $1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't make you a millionaire, right?
Right.
And you know, one of my favorite quotes is by Zig Ziglar. That butcher it. He said, the best thing about becoming a millionaire is who you have to become in order to become a millionaire. Love
it. Ooh, I like that. Yeah, that's good. And I love Zig Ziglar too, by the way. So,
well, this is the problem that law firms have, right? This is exactly the problem that law firms have, particularly, I know on your show, you've had a number of trial lawyers who do contingency work. And the thing is that in the legal industry, you don't have to become a different person to make $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
You can just get lucky once.
Yeah, true. Right? That's true.
And the problem is, if you don't evolve, if you don't grow, if you don't become the owner, you don't become in your mind the owner of $1 million, multi-$1 million business. Mm-hmm. The money comes, the money goes. You can't hang on to it. You have to change who you are and evolve as a person and develop into $1 million person, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there was a time when, you know, if I had $50,000 in the bank, I was like, oh, this is great. Right.
Yeah.
Now it's like, if I've got less than multiple seven figures in my account, I'm like, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah. It is an evolution of thinking. And that I see that a lot on the personal finance side, because you have to think differently to manage a larger amount of wealth. And, you know, you have to develop new habits and new ways of thinking. Otherwise, what happens is you amass or you get this great income, and then you end up blowing it on things you don't really truly want, and not really getting down to the core of who you are and what you want, and using that to develop a life that really satisfies you.
Two of my favorite episodes from your podcast are the one where someone interviewed you about financial literacy for children, which I love that episode. My son is 8 years old right now. And after I listened to that episode, I was telling my wife, he's like, we need to. And then the other episode is, it's the one about, I'm looking at it because I've got her book. I discovered her book on your podcast. It's Money is Emotional.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Great
with
episode.
Christine Lucan. Yeah, that was a good one for sure.
You know, the thing is that like look, you know, the thing about the boiling frog,
mm-hmm.
you just turn up the temperature little by little by little by little, which, by the way, apparently that's not true, but everyone gets the idea.
Yeah.
Snopes busted that myth. Anyway, apparently you can't boil a frog.
Now everyone's going to go try. No.
Yeah. Right. So what you learn on the Lawyer Millionaire podcast, I learned you can't boil a frog. Anyway. So look at it like this, right? Let's say your personal income is $100,000, right? And next year we grow your income from $100,000 to, let's say, $110,000. And next year you grow from $110,000 to $120,000, and $120,000 to $150,000, and $150,000 to $175,000, $175,000 to $200,000, and $200,000 to $225,000, and $225,000 to $250,000, and $250,000 to $275,000, and $275,000 to $300,000, and so on and so forth. Think about how little your life will actually change, mm-hmm. right? Because that first $10,000 of extra income is only going to give you like an extra $400 a month after taxes. What are you going to do? I mean, move into a new house for $400 a month? No, you're going to maybe go out for dinner once or twice extra per month. And then you get used to going out to dinner once or twice extra per month. And then we increase your income by another $10,000 or $20,000. And so you're making an extra $600, $800 a month after taxes. What are you going to do? Change your whole life? No, maybe when it comes time to get your next car, maybe you'll get a slightly nicer car. So now you get used to going out to dinner once or twice extra per month, and you drive a slightly nicer car, right? And then the next year, we grow your income by another $10,000 or $20,000 a year. And you know, you're already used to driving the slightly nicer car. You're already used to going out to dinner once or twice extra per month. So we put an extra, you know, $800 or $1,000 a month after tax in your pocket. What are you going to do? Okay, so now maybe you take a slightly nicer vacation, right? And if you do this little by little by little by little by little, it creeps up on you.
It does.
But
it does.
But this is not what happens in my business, right? In my business, we take a law firm and we grow it from $250,000 in gross revenue to $500,000 in gross revenue, boom, in 18 months. We go from 500,000 in gross revenue to $1 million, $1.5 million in gross revenue, boom, in about 18 months. We go from $1 million in gross revenue to $2 million, boom, in about 18 months. And the bigger it gets, the faster it grows.
Yeah.
And now you've got some real financial changes that you have to cope with. And if you don't grow up emotionally with your money, really bizarre stuff starts to happen.
It does. You start to learn very new things about yourself. You start to really discover new beliefs and new attitudes, and it really reveals who you are as a person.
You know, that's the biggest thing. People come to us a lot and they're like, oh, I'm really worried about increasing my, I'm worried about increasing my income so much, because I've heard usually from people who have never actually had any real money, right? Oh, you know, money makes you a bad person. No. Mm-hmm. Money simply magnifies who you are. If you're an asshole and you're broke, you're going to be a broke asshole who doesn't have a lot of financial resources to indulge your asshole tendencies.
Yeah.
And if you're a wealthy asshole, you're just going to have more financial resources to indulge your asshole tendencies. If you're a really good person, a nice, kind, generous, giving, generous, you know, nice person, and you're broke, talk about fucking frustration, right? Because now you've got all these desires to do good in the world and to help people, but you're freaking broke and you're frustrated. You know, Gandhi said that poverty is one of the greatest cruelties, because it denies good people the resources to do good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
yeah, that's so true.
My soapbox.
Well, I love it. You know, and you really have to develop those habits. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I mean, you have to develop those habits and those attitudes of success early on. I'm a big advocate of that, because I've often said, if you're not saving any money making $200,000 a year, you're not going to be saving any money making $400,000 a year. You have to develop those habits. That's why I love the Profits First system for that attitude and that methodology. It's like, okay, you have to build that in and start thinking about profitability and taking compensating yourself correctly and fairly from the get-go.
To play off of what you just said, look, if you can't run your law firm on 99% of the revenue that you're currently generating, then you desperately need to call How to Manage a Small Law Firm and let us help you fix that. Everyone can run your law firm on 99% of whatever you're currently making. You're not going to miss 1%.
Yeah.
But that 1% starts to build, right? And you start to develop the habit, and you start to develop the muscle, and you start to develop the self-respect. And the self-respect is a big part of it, right? And then, you know, one or two quarters goes by and you say, you know what? I've been running this business on 99%. Let's see what happens if I run it on 98%. And you know what? Mm-hmm. The business won't miss that one extra percent. And then next thing you know, you're taking 10%. Next thing you know, you're taking 15%. Next thing you know, you're taking 20% off the top.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
and I know you said I could curse, but I'm not going to say this, because this is my stage. This is your stage. And everyone else can go suck it. You know what? Because you know what? If you don't take your money off the top, everyone else will.
You're
pay all your vendors. You're going to pay all your employees. You're going to pay everyone. And you and your family are going to be left at the back of the fucking line pissed off, which, by the way, is going to fuck up your business in all kinds of ways. Because when your home life is chaotic because you're financially strapped at home, it causes lots of bad decisions in your business, which paradoxically prevents the business from growing the top line gross revenue. So this is a very practical, ethical, professional way to run a more successful law firm, because you've got to get your home life. I mean, let me tell you, making decisions about your business when you have no mortgage on your home, making decisions about your business, making decisions about your long-term strategic planning, making decisions about, you know, your staff, when you don't have to think when you're not worried about how to pay your bills for the next few years, it helps you make better decisions.
Yeah. And I think so that's really
what I love about the book, Profit First.
Yeah, I think that's really the heart of it, is that it's about developing better behaviors, a better mindset, and better habits as a business owner. Because it's so easy in our businesses to just sign up for all these expenses and add new things and buy new stuff, and all for the sake of growth often. And there has to be some of that, of course, as we're growing, but it's very easy to overspend in your business, and then you're left with no money left over. And I think that's really the key component, and really the big thing behind Profit First is helping business owners to develop those better habits and those key behaviors early on, so that you can take your business and make it more profitable. I mean, I think there's a place where people can get it wrong a little bit and assume that Profit First is just, I'm just going to start taking all kinds of money out of my business. That's part of it. But really the core message is helping you make better decisions and have a better attitude and a better healthy mindset when it comes to your business. Because it could be so easy to just add these extraneous expenses. We sign up for this service or that service, or we buy this thing or that thing. Yeah.
Let's elevate the conversation.
Okay? Sure.
Because you're having the $250,000, $500,000, maybe even the $1 million conversation, right? A lot of your audience, from what I understand, are multi-million dollar law firm owners. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's have that conversation, because conversation you're having right now that you were just having, that's the under $1 million conversation. Let's have the over $1 million conversation. Let's get real here. Okay, here's what happens in the real world. The real world is you got a $2, $3, $5, $10, $20 million law firm, right? You have a chief financial officer.
Mm-hmm.
Your chief financial officer is probably an accountant or a CPA or that type of person. And they fucking hate this book. They hate this book. No, the whole chapter in this book about why your accountant doesn't want you to do Profit First. Okay. And the reason they don't want you to do Profit First is it makes their job harder. You know, fuck them and their job being harder, because your law firm is there to serve your life. So here's what happens over and 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 over. And I had more hands, I keep saying over again, right? Over and over and over again. This is why I wrote the book, because Mike wanted me to write the book, and I kind of didn't write it and didn't write it and didn't write it. And finally, I got so aggravated that I wrote it. Here's what happens in the real world. And every one of your listeners who has a multi-million dollar law firm has either, you've experienced this, or this is happening in your law firm and you just don't know it. All right. Your accountant or your CFO is not implementing Profit First, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the end of the quarter, or you get to the end of the year, and you discover, after it's too late to do something about it, that there's all kinds of stupid waste in your business.
Yeah.
And no one had to have an uncomfortable conversation, because they essentially embezzled your money, except it's worse than embezzlement, right? Because embezzlement, at least they're putting the money in their own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing is they're using your money to avoid having to have uncomfortable conversations with your vendors, mm-hmm. right? Your marketing person is wasting your money to avoid having to have an uncomfortable conversation with your marketing vendors, right? Your director of operations is wasting your profits in order to avoid having to have uncomfortable conversations with the people you're paying them to supervise and hold accountable. Your director of legal services is wasting your money. They're wasting your money. They're using your money to avoid having to have uncomfortable conversations with your attorneys about not meeting their, you know, KPIs, right? And then you find this, and then you get to the end of the quarter and you're looking for your profit distribution, because you see revenues are going up and up and up and everything's going great. And you're like, where's my profit? And they have, they all have good reasons. They all have good excuses. They all have good stories. And it's all a bunch of fucking bullshit, because what it really comes down to is we didn't prioritize your profits. We put our comfort and our convenience in front of your profitability.
Hmm.
Well, fuck that, right? I'm putting my profits first. And if that forces you, my marketing manager, to have an uncomfortable conversation with the vendor who you're buddies with about their performance, well, good, that's your job. And if that means you, my director of legal services, has to actually have a grown-up, professional, responsible conversation with the attorneys who I pay you to supervise and hold them accountable to their KPIs, well, good, that's your job. And I can just go through all the seven main parts of a law firm and go through that. The point I'm making is when you take your profits out of the business first, it forces uncomfortable conversations, which is precisely why everyone in the business except the owner hates it. And since there's one of you and 10 of them, you're outnumbered, right? And they try to convince you that this isn't, they try to convince you that it's not possible. And they try to convince you that it's not practical. And they try to convince you that whatever, whatever, whatever. And if they can't convince you, then they get together and they stage a little fucking coup and they just don't do it. So this book is not Profit First. So Mike McCallowitz wrote Profit First.
Yeah.
And then he asked me to write a book, Profit First for Lawyers. And this book is a call to arms. This book is a call to arms. It's a rallying cry for entrepreneurs who own law firms about why we need to read and implement and defend our right to our profits first. So if you're getting a little sense of what this book's about and you like it, can I give a pitch for my podcast?
Sure, go ahead.
Go to the podcast, Profit First for Lawyers. But for real, like these are two different conversations, right? Because the owner of the $250,000, $500,000, million law firm, whatever, little firms, they're not getting screwed over this way because they're doing most of this stuff themselves and their hands are on the levers.
Right. They're making those decisions. Yeah. Whereas at the higher level, this forces you to have those uncomfortable conversations with your team, the ones who are making those decisions, the ones who are spending the dollars, and enforce that fiscal discipline. I'm curious, how do you, like, if you have that multi-million dollar law firm and you want to implement this system, where do you begin? What's the first step?
Well, you begin by reading the book, Profit First. And then you'll want to read Profit First for Lawyers. So read Profit First for Lawyers first. Read my book first. And my book will tell you to read Mike's book.
Okay.
Which is actually Profit First. But my book will get you ready to read Profit First. My book will get you charged up. My book will get you, like, really in the right frame of mind to read Profit First. Because I promise you, when you then tell your CFO and your controller and your bookkeeper and your accountant and maybe your director of operations, and I'm talking to the multi-million dollar law firm owners here, when you tell them that you are going to implement Profit First, when you ask them to read the book, they're not going to be on board with it. They're going to fight you on it. They're going to. And if they don't fight you on it to your face, they're going to do something behind your back. I promise you they will. And it's not because they're bad people. And the answer isn't, well, then fire them all, because you're never going to get anyone who gets it, right? Because they're not, you're the owner of the business. They're not owners of the business, right? They might be more educated than you when it comes to financial stuff. They might be more sophisticated than you when it comes to financial stuff. They might be smarter than you when it comes to financial stuff. They might be more experienced than you when it comes to financial stuff. And if you're smart, they should be. You should hire people who are smarter and better and more experienced than you at financial stuff than you are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's a big difference between having the education and the experience and the technical training versus being the entrepreneur whose ass is on the line, right? They're getting a salary and they might get a share of your profits. They might get bonuses, but most of their income, most of their family's security is coming from the salary they draw from your business.
Right.
Right. As an entrepreneur, it's exactly the other way around for us. We live in a very different world than everyone who works for us. This is part of why my business, How to Manage a Small Law Firm, exists, is to create a community of entrepreneurs who we manage over 600 law firms. I don't know if you know that.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, we when you go to one of our live quarterly meetings, there's 500 of our 600 members in the room every single quarter. This is like a very rare opportunity to be around a bunch of entrepreneurs who understand the world we live in, which is very different from the world of all of the really smart, wonderful, great people we employ.
Right.
They just don't live in the same world we are in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a different world. They've taken all the risk in that position and you deserve to be compensated for that. There's a reward for that risk.
Well, forget about deserve. I mean, yes, you do deserve. I'm Ayn Rand objectivism to my core here, right? But deserve, let's hit deserve out of it. As a practical matter, your business needs you to be profitable.
Mm.
There, you have an ethical obligation to run a profitable law firm. I have long been advocating, and no one wants to do this, but I've long been advocating that there should be a requirement in bar rules that before you're allowed to own a law firm, you should demonstrate that you have the financial resources to run a profitable law firm. I really believe that we owe an ethical obligation to our clients to run a profitable law firm. You know, think about, look, I really appreciate that you invited me to your podcast after you kind of already knew me and knew what I was all about. We've got a bunch of clients in common. You got my unusual point of view, right? I built this business back in 2010, 11, 12, going around the country, speaking to bar associations. I spent more nights on the road than at home speaking to bar associations. And I don't get invited back to a lot of places. No, really, I don't. Because it's not because I curse and yell and scream and all that stuff. I don't get invited back because I speak about truths that most broke, struggling law firm owners find to be very uncomfortable.
Mm.
And since they're usually the majority of the people in the audience of the bar associations, they vote me out. You know, they put bad things in the comment cards and things like that. And then the CLE directors don't invite me back. Right. So like, this is like one of my famous little routines that I have to speak my truth.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get me invited back. May I have permission to do this at the risk of not being invited back to your podcast? Because a bunch of broke ass fucking lawyers are going to be like, I hate that guy.
Well, you know, sometimes we need that kick, you know, in the behind. Well, yeah. Tell us about it. Go ahead.
All right. I'm just going to ask you a question. Right.
Sure.
All right. There's a legal term. There's a cause of action called fraud in the inducement.
Mm.
Fraud in the inducement is when you induce someone to enter into a contractual relationship by misrepresenting facts or by omitting material facts that you know a reasonable person, you know, reasonable inspection isn't going to reveal.
Okay.
You understand the concept of fraud in the inducement?
Yeah.
Okay. The vast majority of small law firms in this country are engaged in a systematic scheme to fraudulently induce their clients to engage their law firms, which is obviously unethical and unprofessional, right? And would subject someone to bar rule discipline if you think about it the right way. So consider this. All things being equal, would you, Darren, prefer to hire a law firm that is being run by a lawyer who is worried about how they're going to pay their mortgage next month,
Yeah.
Worried about how they're going to make their car payment next month. Worried about how they're going to pay their kids' tuition bill next month. Or, all things being equal, would you rather be running, hire a lawyer who is running a law firm where their mortgage is paid off, or they've got the mortgage prepaid for the next 3 months? Their tuition is prepaid at the beginning of the year, not on some freaking payment plan, where the, you know, the lease for the car is running through the business and they don't even have to think about it because they know it's getting paid for. Which lawyer would you rather have representing you?
Yeah, the second one. And I definitely see what you're driving at here, because
I mean, we can
go ahead. I'll let you
build my case. Okay.
Yeah.
All things being equal, would you rather be represented by a lawyer who has a written business plan
for
how each of the seven main parts of their law firm are supposed to run, and has key performance indicators and metrics in place and job descriptions and documented policies and procedures so that their law firm runs like a business and works for them?
Right, right.
Or would you rather be represented by a lawyer who is maybe even more brilliant than the other one, maybe even smarter than the other one, but has no written business plan, has no marketing plan, has no sales strategy, has no documented policies or systems or procedures for how anything's supposed to get done, has no clear job descriptions for their staffs, has no financial controls for their law firm, and they're working their ass off just to keep things going? Which lawyer would you rather be represented by?
The one with the business plan.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Right? All right.
Yeah.
So, last question here. All things being equal, would you rather be represented by a lawyer who has a budget, cash flow projections, a bookkeeper who doesn't suck, who actually gives them proper financials, a controller who sits down with them every month and says, let's go through these financials so you understand what you're looking at, someone who has a financial roadmap in front of them? Or would you rather be represented by maybe even a smarter lawyer who went to even a better law school, who's even a more brilliant lawyer, but their financial life is just chaotic?
Yeah.
Who would you rather be represented by?
The more successful one you described. Yeah.
Why? As a practical matter, like for real.
Because there are concerns, right? There's ethical concerns, right? The one who's struggling, is the business going to be around to serve my needs, right? Am I going to be even taken care of as a client?
Because you know where their mind is at.
Right. And then it's ethically. Are they going to take my money and run because they're struggling so much they just need the money to pay
their
rent?
Let's just leave ethical out of it and say that they're both, you know, saints.
Right. Okay.
But you know that the person who's struggling financially, the person who's working crazy hours and having fights at home with their family because their business is ruining their life, they're sitting there in your deposition and their mind is somewhere else.
Exactly.
They're sitting there in that hearing and they're getting distracted by things. When my son was being delivered, being born, we went to the, you know, I talked to the doctor who was delivering him, and I said, what are you planning to do the night before? Because we had a scheduled delivery at 8:30 in the morning on September 1st, 2015. That was his birthday and time. And we mailed the doctor. I said, what are you planning to do the night before? And he said, that's strange. No one's ever asked me that before. And I said, well, you're going to be delivering my son into the world, and I want to know what frame of mind you're going to be in. And he said, huh. And I said, I want you to promise me that you're going to take your wife out for a nice dinner and do something you really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you scrubbing your fucking toilets the day before you deliver my son. I don't want you running errands the day before you deliver my son. I don't want you having a fight with your family because you're never there for them the day before you deliver my son. Right? You know that you're expecting your lawyer to show up in the best state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't do that if their business is messing up their life, right? So anyway, my little CLE talk is that, you know, part of it, I take them through this little thing, and the lawyers, you know, they start seeing where this thing is going and they start getting more and more anxious, but they can't deny reality. And I say, so what do you think would happen if The client is sitting there in the sales meeting, in the consultation, and they're about to sign the engagement agreement. You say, hold on a second. Before you sign this engagement agreement, I need to make some disclosures. You should know that I don't have any financial controls over how this place runs. You should know I don't have a budget that maps out how this place will stay in business for the next 6 to 12 months. I don't have any job. I think you should know this.
Yeah.
And you know that all of the clients would say, well, in that case, I'm not going to hire you.
Yeah.
Right?
That'd be a game changer.
You know what that makes that piece of information? It makes it material. That makes it a material fact. Right?
Yeah.
Are you going to invite me onto your podcast or not invite me onto your podcast, whether I wear a white shirt or a black shirt, or you don't care?
I don't really care.
It's not a material fact.
Yeah.
It's not material, right? But if it will change the person's decision about whether or not to do business with you,
yeah,
that makes it a material fact. And the lawyers, and there's the majority of lawyers in this country are running financially struggling law firms, and that's true. And they're failing to disclose this material fact to their prospective new clients. And they're allowing their prospective new clients to engage them in a legally binding contract by failing to disclose a fact or a series of facts that are material. That's called fraud in the inducement. This is serious stuff. So this isn't just like feel good, profit first for lawyers. Isn't this nice? Because we all need to drive nice cars and live in beautiful homes and take great vacations. We have an ethical obligation to run our business profitably because our clients expect it of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that very much because I have gotten pushback from folks that think that, you know, the whole idea of trying to maximize profitability in a law firm is unethical by itself because it should be a nobler pursuit. But actually, you are correct.
Exactly the opposite of what you're saying.
To take care of yourself. Yeah, definitely.
Your clients are depending on you to show up as the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you're not the one practicing law anymore on the front lines because you've got a bunch of lawyers working for you, that's great. Your employees are expecting you to show up as the best version of yourself, right? And the best version of yourself as the entrepreneur leading the law firm is going to make decisions about how the law firm delivers services to its clients. And you should therefore also take an active interest, I think, in the financial success of the lawyers you have working for you. I want everyone who works for me. I have 100 full-time employees, and I take an active interest. I want each and every one of them to be financially comfortable because I want them to show up as the best version of themselves. I don't want them showing up to work worrying about how they're going to pay their rent.
Yeah. That's true. Great stuff, Arjun. Well, unfortunately, we're out of our time here. But I understand you have a great resource pack to give to our listeners, and the link is going to be in the show notes. Can you quickly tell us a little bit about that as we close?
Yes, but first I'm going to give them a plug for you and say,
all right.
Well, for real, like every lawyer should engage in real financial planning.
Yeah.
Right. And not only should you engage in real financial planning for yourself, but if you really want to supercharge the performance of your team, help them get some financial planning in place for themselves too. That will help you recruit better people, retain better people, motivate better people. So, you know, I don't know, Darren, if you offer a service for owners of law firms and their staff, but I would be encouraging all of the law firm owners listening to the show to not only do a financial plan for yourself, but then you likewise for your staff. It'll help you have more productive staff. All right.
Yes.
Now, my own plug, as if I haven't given enough already. Obviously, the first one is the book Profit First for Lawyers, available on Amazon. Second is Profit First for Lawyers podcast, which you can get on wherever you get podcasts. But my team also gave me a special bundle to share just with your audience. And you can, you'll put the link in the show notes.
Yes.
So the show notes is where you get the link to the special Profit First for Lawyers bundle, which will include one, an assessment you can do to determine whether or not and the degree to which your bookkeeper sucks and is flushing your life down the toilet. right? Lots of lawyers are struggling financially. You're having a lot of problems because your bookkeeper sucks and you don't even know it. So we have a bookkeeper assessment that you can do to objectively measure and evaluate the performance of your bookkeeper. Two in the package is a financial literacy quiz. Third is something to help you figure out your labor cost ratio, which is, if you don't know what that is, if you know what that is, then you're like, wow, this is great. If you don't know what that is, then you really need to get the labor cost ratio worksheet. Third is a business plan workbook. And also in the bundle is finally a full set of sample financials. Like, this is what your financials that you're getting from your bookkeeper should look like. And if they don't, make them look that way.
All right. Great stuff. Well, thanks for sharing that with our audience. Again, that's going to be in the show notes. Click the link down there to get access to that. Arjan, it's been great having you on today. Thanks for coming on and sharing your wisdom and expertise and your energy. I love it. Great stuff.
I appreciate you having me here, and I appreciate you giving me a platform to speak my truth.
Absolutely. All right. And that's a wrap.
A big thank you to Arjan Robbins for joining us here on today's episode and sharing his insights and his enthusiasm with us. I hope that you are fired up about maximizing profitability in your practice. Remember to check the show notes for the resource pack that Arjan mentioned and a bunch of other great links and things for you there as well. I love this whole concept of prioritizing your profitability. And I love how Arjan made that argument that it's not just a nice thing. It's not just an important thing for law firm owners to think about. It's your ethical responsibility to have a profitable law firm. It's good for your clients. It's good for your employees. It's good for everybody. And it's great for you. It's so important, you know, but it goes beyond that. It goes beyond profitability because it's not just about making a lot of money. It's also about keeping it and making it grow. And that's what we're all about. That's our mission here at The Lawyer Millionaire, is to help law firm owners bridge that gap between profitability and true personal prosperity. Because you can be making a lot of money, right? But if you're not hanging on to anything and it's all going out the door, uh-oh. You know, our thing here is helping law firm owners create true, lasting, generational wealth, financial freedom enabling wealth that's going to be around for themselves and their family. If you want to talk with me about how we can help you do that as you scale and grow, I'm going to put the link to my calendar in the show notes. Go ahead and click on that link and you can schedule some time to chat with me. Well, this has been the Lawyer Millionaire Podcast. I'm your host, Darren Wertz. Keep forging ahead. And remember, being a lawyer millionaire isn't just about the quantity of your money. It's about the quality of your life. Thank you so much for being here with me today. I'm already looking forward to our next conversation together.
Thank you for listening to The Lawyer Millionaire. Click the follow button below to be notified when new episodes become available. This content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. This content is not intended to represent investing or tax advice. Always seek the advice of a qualified investment or tax advisor with any questions you may have regarding your own financial circumstances.